This week, U.S. shares posted the second weekly rally as Bitcoin flew to the highest point in over a month. Well, welcome back, everyone. Chris Waltzek, your host here. Most of our listeners have bought or sold stock shares or even traded part-time in the past, so we can all relate to the symptoms of a new proposed APA-backed anomaly. I'm calling ADID, Attention Deficit Investment Disorder. The symptoms of ADID include episodes of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, followed by bouts of FOMO, fear of missing out. And I think this was maybe best illustrated in recent weeks by the plunge in U.S. equities and in Bitcoin. We saw Bitcoin fly in just a few weeks' time from 7 or 8,000 to over 20,000, only to plunge to under 6,000, and now to run back to nearly 12,000. Just a lot of fear, uncertainty, doubt, followed by fear of missing out. So Bill Murphy joins me, and together we prescribe the only known panacea for ADID, precious metals diversification. My guest returns to the show with his perspective on precious metals and Bitcoin. It doesn't take a PhD in finance to recognize the betas on Bitcoin and gold are still significantly different, even though Bitcoin has a quite unique beta, which you really wouldn't expect since everyone calls Bitcoin digital gold, is actually quite non-correlated. So not only can gold or the precious metals improve and lower the risk profile of your portfolio, also helps offset the risk inherent in Bitcoin. Just over the last year since we started following it at under 1,000, Bitcoin that is, but just about 10 or 15% of a single Bitcoin will buy you an ounce of gold. Gold is now the insurance policy, and I have two more big guests coming in next week who think that silver really eclipses even gold with its upside potential. That's a growing theme of many of our top guests and pundits here on Goldseek. And speaking of top guests and pundits, the Kinesis Crowd Fund, or ICO, has finally been launched, and we, of course, offered that information directly to my subscribers in the Alpha Stocks newsletter, so the links are up there. I also have an interview recorded, but I have to wait for the top brass at Goldseek, which are currently away in a non-disclosed location where there's no internet access, with, of course, Andrew McGuire, the big whistleblower in London, as well as Thomas Gocklin in Australia, who's heading this fascinating project. It would be, I'd love to get this information out as soon as early next week for our listeners. So just waiting on approval. We also discuss the top crypto developer and visionary techno whiz bang, Daniel Larimer. This was the founder of Steemit, several other projects. He came up with designated proof of stake, a new protocol that essentially eliminates the need for mining and so many other processes and allows for up to hundreds of thousands, if not a million or more transactions per second, potentially the big scalability solution that we've all been looking for. I'm calling it Ethereum 2.0 as well. I'm sure are others, but it's just the first thing that came to my mind when I started to investigate this. His project, his latest project, is EOS, or EOS, where a lot of people are calling that Ethereum on steroids, and he actually chuckled in an interview pointing to that might be one of its name, but it's a non-designated term. Of course, our big-time crypto OG, Brock Pierce, heavily involved in this as well, and I think it's going to revolutionize the crypto space. So we discussed this, and I want to encourage everyone to look deeply into EOS. This is the future unfolding right now. I mean, I don't want to say it will dislodge Ethereum, because that's just not going to happen now. There's too many ICOs, but this is really significant. And it will just, I think, further legitimize the crypto space. And we're seeing a lot of that happen lately, with NASDAQ now anticipating an ETF and maybe other derivatives contracts on the cryptos, on Bitcoin. You know it will be coming for Litecoin and Ethereum too. So just more big projects headed this way. And there's also another, maybe the most exciting potential news story for Bitcoin enthusiasts and aficionados this year will be the Lightning Network. And I'm sure folks are familiar with this that are just kind of keeping tabs on the sector. And if not, that's fine. The Lightning Network is a proposed solution to the very expensive and costly and time-consuming transactions, which sort of defeats, you know, the founder Satoshi Nakamoto's original idea in his concept paper way back in 2008-2009, to have free or virtually free ubiquitous transaction payment system. And what we really have right now is digital gold, digital plutonium. I mean, it's so valuable. And it's being used primarily, hodled, if you will, as a store of value. Nothing wrong with that. We love it. But in order for Bitcoin to reach its ultimate potential, I think we could easily make the case that we should see parity with gold. And that would put it in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $400,000, which incidentally is 30 or 40 times where it is today. Most of my guests, and I have a great one next week you'll definitely want to tune in for. I don't want to give too much away, just a little teaser here, but I have several already recorded. I think you'll love this individual, a very successful person looking for at least another tenfold in the crypto space, $3 trillion, and we're pretty far off. That's 8 to tenfold. But Lightning Network is my current expectation between that and the proposed ETFs on the NASDAQ and other ETFs and derivatives contracts. Combination could be the impetus that propels Bitcoin fivefold higher to 50,000 as soon as this year, and maybe even on a runaway up to 100,000. As soon as 2018, 2019. Now, that being said, from a technical perspective, I'm not nearly as bullish. I think that Bitcoin moves about 6 to 7 fold the speed of a typical market. And since we just had a runaway blow off, that would mean 5 or 6 year correction would occur over about 10 to 12 months, which means we could really back and fill in for at least another year. So all of 2018 could easily just be dead air. Keep in mind, that would be setting the stage for what I think is the next big rally higher. So currently suggesting that enthusiasts hold at least 10% cryptos in their accounts and 10 to 20% in precious metals. And then of Andy Schechtman from Miles Franklin stops by. He's put together a very interesting crypto. It's non-tokenized, but it has a blockchain backing concept together with Sprott Asset Management, as well as the Royal Canadian Mint. This is really interesting. You'll want to listen to him outline just what they've put together. There's a lot to like here. Also some challenges. And he also makes a really generous offer to listeners, to where you essentially can trade your gold bullion coins at near 1-to-1 for PCS graded, hermetically sealed gold coins of roughly the same gold weight. The folks at Miles Franklin, really good friends. And we'd like for you to help us keep the lights on here at Gold Seek Radio. Remember, your subscription not only offers you a free Bitcoin cold storage wallet, which we send right away, usually the same day that you sign up. For 5-year and 10-year subscribers, we offer our ITZ Interzone tokens, which are still holding firm at around 50 cents. That's up from 2 cents. We send 100 to you. Your support that helps us stay on here. So if you like what you hear, we've been on for 12 years. If you'd like for us to stay on another year, please sign up for the Alpha Stocks newsletter with all the must-hear stuff, plus all the links to the Kinesis ICO. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. And remember to call in to our toll-free hotline, 1-641-715-3900. You can leave your questions and comments there. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can cancel and re-record if you like. You'll need the mailbox number, 514049. That number again, 641-715-3900, followed by mailbox number, 514049. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. partly cloudy skies rolled in over the precious metals this week on U.S. dollar strength in anticipation of a rate hike at the next FOMC meeting slated for next month. Nevertheless, in recent weeks, gold has broken through and held above the long-term trend line going all the way back to 2011, steady above support, finishing the week at $1,330. Silver lost just 23 cents, finishing at $1,648. And the precious metals XAU are also holding firm above support. They dropped 3 points down to $80.53. However, the commodities sector actually bucked the downward trend, moving solidly higher, as seen by the CRB index, as well as black gold, which led the charge its second week rally, adding $2.6355 per barrel. This consolidation forecast continues to suggest $70 in the months ahead on continued optimism from global economic recovery, as well as supply constraints from OPEC. The Bitcoin ETF gave back just a few points, GBTC. Well, the top story moving the gold sector, news that the FOMC meeting minutes were released on Wednesday. Central bankers noted they expected inflation to tick higher in 2018. This could be the potentially perfect world environment for gold, similar to the 1970s, where inflation and higher yields pushed investors into the price protection gold safe haven. Fed officials noted increased likelihood of further interest rate hike in March and the potential for 4 rate increases in 2018. Still, I don't buy the 4 rate hike thesis. I agree with St. Louis Fed President James Bullard. That's, of course, the best Federal Reserve, I think, in the United States. And he notes the Fed very unlikely to raise 4 more. I see 2 at most this year. We'll certainly see one in the next 25 days. Precious metals, bottom line, and Bitcoin. Well, the CRB and oil, as I mentioned, remain very strong. That's a big positive for the sector. From a technical view, gold held up well, and we should see an assault on 1400 in the coming weeks as long as the greenback downtrend persists and it's consolidating in a downward trajectory. Shares in silver have slumped, and I continue to see sort of neutral patterns there. I do remain bullish long-term, but cautious in the near-term. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over U.S. shares on Friday. Stocks added to gains for the 8th day out of 10 sessions, up over 2.5% for the week. The Dow blasted higher 91 points, finishing at 25,309. The S&P 500 picked up 15 points, finishing at 2747. And the NASDAQ added 98, closing at 7337. The top story moving the markets, aerospace and defense industry sectors continue to remain red hot. The sector is up about 7% for the year, while the S&P is up only 2%, thanks in part to Air Force contracts for cutting-edge fighter jets. Leading the sector higher, one of our favorite alpha stocks candidates, Lockheed Martin, LMT. It's found great support around the 50-day moving average, and it's positioned for much higher advances with its military systems. The company pays a cash dividend of around $2 per share. That's well above the industry average of around 1.7%. In related news, topping the IBD list, Teledyne Tech, TDY, HEICO, HEI, Curtis Wright, CW, and Rockwell, COL, including General Dynamics, another Alpha Stocks favorite. U.S. shares, bottom line. Hillenbrand, ticker HI, was one of their big picks this week, and also KLX, ticker KLXI, as well as Alphabet Inc., GOOGL. All three were featured by IBD from a technical vantage point. They look solid here. Among the FANG stocks, of course, the Google search engine operator Alphabet should do quite well, and the FOMC is slated to raise rates on the 21st of next month. That's about 25 days. The Fed Funds futures now show 83% odds, so it's virtually a lock. And our 7 indicator greed to fear index remains near the lowest levels I've seen in years, despite the 2-week rally. This really suggests much higher prices away, as I've been mentioning. Really bullish for U.S. share. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. It's a pleasure to welcome back Bill Murphy from the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. Of course, he works with Chris Powell, just blowing the whistle, if you will, on all of the market manipulation, and we've sure heard a lot of that lately. Before the show, we were talking about Anarchapulco. This is, of course, the big meeting of Jeff Berwick in Acapulco, and, you know, doubled in size this year, 1,500 folks. I understand you've been there in the past.
Yeah, I was there last year and gave a presentation, and at that point, the crypto people were all excited because the price of gold, of Bitcoin, had just reached gold at 1,240. And, of course, it was just beginning its incredible surge higher, and they were ecstatic then. This year, I can't imagine what the move would have been like.
You know, the volatility over 20,000. Actually, I read one article that said that in South Korea, it touched 26, 27,000 due to illiquidity before plunging under 6,000. That's all. In a few weeks' time, a nice little recovery lately. What we think's going on here is the anticipation of the Lightning Network. You may have heard of this, to try to vastly speed up the transactions of Bitcoin, as well as lower the fees, which is it's almost instantaneous, unlike Ethereum and Bitcoin, which have been bogged down. They've actually been punished for growing and their own success. It doesn't scale up. An interesting project, EOS, called the Ethereum Alternative. This Dan Larimer is at the head of it. He's created, you know, Steemit and so many others. He pops out a new project every year, then moves on to the next project. So we're kind of hopeful that this is going to clean up the crypto space. Back to gold and the precious metals. You say there was a strong interest by folks at Anarchapulco?
Well, no, they were just excited about what was going on. And quite frankly, most of the gold crowd, including myself, was disgusted at what was going on in gold. And that was, again, at 1240 and a year ago. And here we are at this much further along the way, and you look what's happened to their sector and what they've done, and where gold and silver are still mired along here. So it's just the contrast is what struck me. And as I said, this year I didn't go, but it would have been, yeah, it's corrected. But, you know, we would love to have gold correct to 12,000.
That type of volatility in the crypto space we just saw the last 2 months, people were looking around saying, where else could I park some of these funds? Something more stable. And what held its value? You know, throughout all of it, gold. And I heard Peter Schiff debating on Bitcoin. He's not a big fan of the cryptos. And he points out whether or not there's value here, we're not sure yet. But he says we are sure. There is an incredible multi-millennial track record of wealth preservation in the precious metals. You can call Bitcoin digital gold all day long, but in the final analysis, when the stuff really hits that oscillating device, precious metals, that's the go-to asset class.
I think we've got some spectacular moves coming that are going to surface out of nowhere. It's just the recent period of years is taking its toll on the sentiment, and it's been very difficult, and the action in the shares has just been dreadful. And it's all going to change, and we can't wait for that change to come. I know it's coming, but it certainly is taking longer than most of my colleagues and myself thought would be the case.
I want for the crypto folks, which tend to be very young, I would be a senior citizen in that group, I wish that they could wrap their minds around the fact that gold, unlike fiat money, unlike dollars, it's sort of the Swiss Army knife in the currency world, in that, yes, it's a store of value, but it also has all of the versatility of a commodity. I mean, of a really useful, amazing commodity, in particular, silver. If someone in the gold crowd could sort of put their creative cap on, spin up an article on the versatility of silver, really has a lot of the characteristics of Ethereum, or, you know, some of these other highly versatile cryptocurrencies, with the added benefit of we're not expecting any really scary legislation. I mean, any day we know the central bankers will have their minions drop the axe on the whole crypto space. You know, it's going to be a war of attrition, I'm sure. Diversification from crypto into precious metals at discounted prices. Gold and silver, they have a track record of safety, but they're also really useful.
For the people there at that conference a year ago, and it made a fortune to take some of their money out and put it in gold and silver, makes all the sense in the world, and I'm sure some of them are actually doing that. I've heard that to be the case, so yeah, it makes total sense. And again, I wish those vested in that sector, you know, well as can be. I just want our sector to get going again and show some excitement because, you know, we just haven't had any in so long. People forget, put some great moves in the precious metals are life.
This time last year, Bitcoin was around 1,000 and now over 10,000-ish, and you can procure nearly 10 gold coins for what was only one gold coin a year ago. Just a great opportunity to lock in those gains. And Peter Schiff also pointed out the importance of recognizing that, yes, gold might seem a little boring, but, you know, these 70% drops in a crypto really makes gold look tame by comparison. If we have another big swoon, wouldn't you like to have something more solid?
I hate to say this, but silver has dropped the same amount. It just took longer, of course. The crypto thing happened very quickly. But silver's gone down, you know, 70%. I'm as super bullish as you can get about what's coming. It's just, it's taking its toll. It's been horrible. Contrast to the thing. So it's understandable why the sentiment in our sector is so bad and why people are running to something else, some alternative asset that's moving. It's doing something. As you know, where I come from in this, it's all because of the gold cartel and what they've done to suppress prices of gold and silver. Do I think that's going to change and be dramatic, as I mentioned earlier, happen out of nowhere? Absolutely. It's just keeps going on and on.
You know, we were also talking earlier about the importance of preparing for the unexpected. For instance, we discussed the Carillion disaster in recent weeks where investors saw their shares plunge in a very brief period of time. Of course, this is a British construction company that was tied in with the government. 95% of its value to virtually nothing. We also saw the volatility index. Of course, this was a Swiss ETF, exchange-traded fund, ETN, that lost about 95% of its value in just a couple of days as the idea that stocks only go up suddenly evaporated. Financial engineering catches people off guard, putting the eggs all in one basket. Maybe that's a good segue into the importance of the yellow metal as a diversification tool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's anybody who's prudent would do something like that, and certainly makes sense, you know, to have some of the assets in the gold and silver, precious metals. And obviously, I'm a major advocate.
We've had such stability, haven't we, here, I think you'd agree, in North America, with surprising currency resiliency compared to, let's say, certain Asian countries. According to GATA, China's growing affluence of its consumers has led to just roaring demand for gold, bracelets, rings, jewelry, and, of course, investment demand. And they've linked this, at least in the article, to the property boom and the really high stock valuations stemming from Beijing. And here in the U.S., you don't hear the call. Take some of those stock profits, take some of the Bitcoin, and roll it into something more tangible. You could make a case that we've had such stability in our currency, but that never lasts. Should we be expecting more of the status quo or preparing for something more rocky with the greenback?
Well, I think what just happened in the stock market a couple of weeks ago is like a tremor, before an earthquake of what's coming in terms of volatility and market action and so on. And yes, I think things are going to get very volatile, and like they have been, it's going to create a lot more concern. Right now, as you've just mentioned, and there's reason there's not much interest in the West, gold and silver, there's no fear. Things just go along no matter what. The stock market goes up outside of very recently, just doesn't correct. Other assets just keep going up. And gold and silver just sit there. And that's the problem. And it's created complacency. And as you mentioned, you know, over in these other countries, you know, they're thinking differently than we are, and they're taking advantage of these cheap gold and silver prices and buying them.
What we see here is the fear, uncertainty, and doubt is immediately reversed in stocks with FOMO, the fear of missing out. Just the opposite in the precious metals. We have nothing but FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and a just complete lack of FOMO. No one is afraid. And again, this ties in with this idea that the attention deficit investment disorder, that's what I'm calling it. Isn't that what really led to the FOMO that took us to 20,000 Bitcoin just before it collapsed? You know, it's this fear of missing out, but we don't have that in the precious metals. If we could craft a contrarian indicator today, what an interesting indicator that would be. The markets where there's tons of FOMO, watch out, be careful, I guess man the lifeboats, but where there's virtually no fear of missing out, like we're seeing in the precious metals, maybe it's time, you know, to take another look there. As we wrap up here today, another interesting story from China. They were waiting a quarter century for their yuan oil futures contract to start trading, pricing crude oil, which they obviously need tremendously for their economic growth, and it's no longer in U.S. dollars. That would seem to, I guess, be a challenge for the greenback, which is struggling to maintain reserve currency status. Any thoughts?
Well, I mean, certainly it's going to, it could be, you know, a very important development, and I think it's March 26th. It's scheduled to come into being, and we'll have to see. As I mentioned, that bothers me is that all these things that we've heard about over the past years that are going to make a difference in the gold market, they haven't meant a thing. It's all because the gold cartel is able to get around it. I mean, one day they're going to, and I think collectively all at once, they'll all mean something, and it'll be overwhelming, and the bad guys will be forced to run. So I'm hoping that this makes a difference, like other people that are bullish on the precious metals, and we'll just have to wait and see. It's nice to be pleasantly surprised.
As you say, it takes time for a market to build up momentum. Maybe it has to accumulate these positive stories, such as the one we just mentioned, as well as another one this week that Idaho's state Congress actually agreed to exclude capital gains and losses on the sale of precious metals, coins, bullion, and whatnot. We've heard similar legislation, as you mentioned earlier before the show, in states like Utah, Arizona. And interestingly, Arizona in the past week or so also agreed to accept cryptocurrencies as legal tender to pay taxes.
Yeah, it has been a struggle, and I don't mind saying so, but I think we've got an explosion coming out of nowhere for gold and silver. It's going to be ranked way up there with the crypto movements. It's just taking forever to develop. But once the cat's out of the bag, as they say, watch out. And I think the real key, which has been something I focused on for a while now, is $21 silver. If it can take that out, I think it can make a move up towards 100 faster than most people can imagine. But signs of life, and then we could be off to the races.
The interesting comments made by Peter Schiff recently, not on this show, but, you know, we're looking at the potential for the slow decline in the greenback to sort of reach a moment, a tipping point, where it simply capitulates, where we see 1987-style asymptotic decline. That could be one of the drivers, I think, that leads to the scenario that you've outlined. Could you tell us more about La Metropole Cafe and how we can sign up?
Sure. Well, people can sign up for a two-week free trial and see if it's of interest. I write about the gold and silver markets and cover financial markets to some degree, and been doing it nearly 20 years and love what I do. Chris Powell does a great job, my colleague at GATA, and at www.gata.org, and people can sign up and see what he puts out all the time, and does a great job. He's going to be on his way to Asia next month to a couple of countries to spread the gospel about GATA and be on CNBC over there and try to stir things up a bit.
All right, Bill Murphy, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Good to talk to you.
So glad you're back with us. It's just great to have Andy Schechtman, president of Miles Franklin. Andy, I understand you have something interesting in the crypto sphere tied in with precious metals.
Very proud, Sovereign Bullion International. Of course, it will be, I guess you could call it, powered by Miles Franklin. And in conjunction with the folks out of Toronto and Carlsbad, California, Sprott. The program, for lack of a better definition, would be digital gold held the Royal Canadian Mint, validated on a distributed ledger blockchain, verified by the RCM, which by extension is the Canadian government. Now, at this point, there's nothing tokenized with this program, albeit perhaps that's in the future, similar to, I guess you could think of it as a warehouse receipt, where custody is denoted immutably, cryptographically, on a distributed ledger. And the Canadian government stands behind the veracity of this ledger. And then in terms of the end game, to me, you can have the greatest digital anything, but if you're not able to convert it and take possession, what good is it? And so the back end of this program is the ability to take possession in any product that we sell as a distribution or a liquidation from the account out of the RCM.
It's clearly very creative and I'm sure tremendous effort on your part and that of your team. However, there's going to be detractors who will say I'm remiss if I don't point out the lack of decentralization here. That does not diminish your project in any way, but we do want our listeners to understand, obviously, without a token, you're completely reliant on a centralized authority. There's a little more transparency. We've got a blockchain. We have a distributed ledger to count on. That's the future. You're ahead of everyone else. You're ahead of the curve. You're still centralized.
So you're correct. Canadian government standing behind the centralized ledger. And I could see how the detractors would feel that way. It is a step in the right direction, and albeit we would like to ultimately find a solution for decentralization, and that's something that's in the works, but one step at a time, first laying the rails, if you will, or the foundation to even have that discussion, which is something that I do believe will transpire.
Let's talk a bit about who controls the reins here. The backing of the Royal Canadian Government, that's interesting. The idea of not finding out that five whales don't control 85% of the pre-mined tokens. Everybody's ranting and raving about decentralization. But we all know a tiny fraction of 1% of people control something like 80 or 90% of Bitcoin. Because most of these currencies are either pre-mined or have huge incentives offered to the early adopters and investors, the deep pockets. So let's talk about your concept versus that failing model.
Well, our concept has a governor, if you will, as a one-to-one backing on every single credit that is issued, and that would be the model we would follow on a decentralized version as well, where every token would then issued would then be backed one-to-one with an ounce of gold. So while it may conceivably trade at a premium at some point, it would still have the backing of one-to-one gold. So the issuance of tokens, if we get to that point, would be limited to the amount of gold that was held at the RCM.
Let's say I'm, John Q. investor here. Tell me how it can benefit me to have this transparency, this blockchain tied in with my precious metals investment.
Some of the benefits would be obviously not having a whole bunch of gold under your roof, having the ability to have it held somewhere safe, validated by a sovereign government. For a lot of people who own a significant portion of their wealth in gold, they have a hard time collateralizing their value or their wealth, trying to buy a new home, trying to show the bank what assets you have. This is a CUSIP registered product where it could fit nicely into a portfolio from an advisory standpoint, or it could also, because it is validated on a blockchain and verified by the Canadian government, could be collateralized or at least verified asset as it pertains to any type of transactions where a collateralized value would need to be determined. The bottom line is this. I'm still old school enough to realize that physical possession trumps all else. And if we're going to look at how something like this works, it has to be held by a trusted entity and backed and verified by a trusted entity. And so in a world of imperfect choices, the RCM and the Canadian government, to me, is as good as you're going to find. And when we look at all of these other forms of cryptos, so many of them, so few of them are actually backed by anything. This is a one-to-one relationship. And I think really what it is a less expensive way to own precious metals, less friction, if you will. It is a very convenient way to own precious metals. Quite frankly, the bottom line, Chris, is that we feel that this is the beginning of a new trend in the marketplace. And so, more than anything, we are entering into this optimistically that this will probably change our business on many levels. Quite frankly, I believe that within a very short period of time, we will be offering individual coins on this program, not just ounces of gold.
Clarify, when you say offering individual coins, are we talking tokens or actual?
Actual items, American Eagles, Canadian Maples, that kind of moving to that direction. The backers, the financial backers in this program, one of which is Goldcorp and American Barrick and Sprott. So as you can tell, even the miners are looking at this as a way to bring their product transparently to the market. So I think that a lot of this is new, and a lot of, especially for us in the hard asset industry, have gone along kicking and screaming, Chris, and trying to legitimize what we do while ignoring, if we will, the trend, which has now become so glaring that we can no longer ignore it. Right now are of less cost, more convenience, collateralization, those kinds of things. It may not be enough to make people say, look, I'll just rather have gold held in our Brink storage.
There will always be a component of any group of investors who would like to have the option to collateralize, which is making your funds available for further financing. So, for instance, let's say you have some other precious metals that you're holding with Miles or you're holding with Brinks. I don't want to sell this because I'm holding it long term, but I'd also like to have the ability to purchase a condo in Miami Beach or Puerto Rico. For this affluent investor, it opens up new options, reasonable options, with the added benefit of transparency from the Canadian government. That's your selling point.
Contact information, andy@milesfranklin.com, 1-800-822-8080. Minnesota, our home state, being the only state in America to regulate the precious metals industry, that's important. Federally non-regulated industry, don't forget that. Very, very important. The real credit to this program, however, I can't take all the credit. I have to acknowledge the folks at Sprott. The folks at Sprott really have been the driving force behind this program, and we are just really thrilled to have been asked to be a big part of it. But any questions, please feel free to direct them directly to me at andy@milesfranklin. This program should be fully launched within the next, I would think, 4 to 5 weeks, 6 on the outside. And so there are a few things that I'm not able to completely articulate on. I don't mean to be dancing around the specifics, but 4 to 5 weeks we should be launched. There'll be plenty of information, and hopefully I'll come back right around the time that we launch it and give you the 411 as it pertains to the whole thing. I talked about this with you last time I was on your show. Right now, the $20 gold pieces and the $10 gold pieces are the absolute cheapest I've ever seen them in 29 years of running my company. AU grade and XF grade $20 liberties are just a few dollars over gold spot. In fact, we've been running a special for 20 or more extra fine 20 liberties at $1 over gold spot. In all the years I've done this, I've never seen anything even close to that. Not even close to that. There are anomalies and disconnections all over the place. And maybe the crypto space has something to do with that, as the metals industry has witnessed a good deal of selling over the last year, opening up, I believe, as good of a buying opportunity in just about any product that we sell as I've ever seen in 3 decades. I don't say that flippantly. To be able to offer a $20 gold piece at $1 over the price of gold spot is absolutely ridiculous, something I never thought I'd ever see. So while our focus is trends and moving forward with the future, we also never lose focus of what got us here, and that's the physical holding of precious metals. And for those of your listeners that still have the desire to do so, they're really amazing opportunities.
For our new listeners, I want to make it clear what Andy and the folks at Miles are offering, a maybe once in an investment lifetime opportunity to pick up these numismatic gold coins, essentially the same ounce for ounce of gold, but you receive it in a hermetically sealed PCGS rating standard. That's the top rating standard of collectible gold coins.
Thank you. You take care, Chris. We'll talk to you soon.
It's a pleasure to welcome back Trader Dan to the show. Dan Norsini, he runs a blog here. It's TraderDan.net, and he's been a commodities trader for many a moon. He has quite a following online. Welcome back, Dan Norsini.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for the invite. Nice to be back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been too long. And, you know, a lot of great stuff up on your blog. Biotech sector, payrolls, the precious metals.
You know, when I look at the precious metals, Chris, I always look at them. Let me back up and say it this way. I never look at them in isolation. I always look at them in comparison to other markets, other asset classes, commodity sector as a whole, interest rate, currency markets, as well as the stock indices. And I try to get a sense of where money is moving. I guess money flows are a big thing for me as a trader. I like to kind of see, you know, where the money's going, where's it coming out of, where it's going into. And in that sense, you get a sense of what the sentiment is toward a market. And for me as a trader, trying to anticipate, you know, whether there's a bullish bias to a market or a bearish bias, you really got to gauge that sentiment. And the best way to gauge it is just to follow the price action and see where the money's going.
That's your job, right, as a trader. I mean, you've got to try to find out the money flows and just where folks have interest. And, you know, you might look at the COT report, keep an eye on the commercials versus the specs, see what the hedge funds are doing. And there's been some commotion over the yellow metal there with the COT, that the commercials and the specs and hedge funds just aren't behaving the way they typically do. Are you watching this at all?
Not only for the precious metals, but pretty much every other commodity market out there, including the interest rate markets as well, and the currencies, I might add, too, although the CME currencies are a lot smaller than the Forex markets. But, yeah, that being said, one of the things you have to take into account this time of the year is, you know, you're starting at year end. You know, you're already into the month of December. Every year we get the same sort of phenomenon where you start to see traders, hedge funds, large specs begin to start moving to the sidelines or start to do some book squaring or book some profits or whatever. And so you'll get some fluctuations in the typical relationships that you normally see among those various groups, mainly because there's a lot of positioning going on and a lot of book squaring. You know, if you think about it this way, if you're a fund manager, you've had some good trades for, let's call it, you know, 11 months out of the year, you're doing pretty well in a lot of your trades. You want to go ahead and take some of that money off before the year end, and you like to do it generally before the mad rush to the exits happens, you know, towards the last couple of weeks of December, and particularly before the market conditions thin out as you get into the Christmas holiday. And so you'll start to see some of that year-end movement, and that can give you some distortions in the normal relationships that we typically follow. So, yeah, you know, following a commitment of traders, sure, you'll see some of that. You might see some aberrations, but generally those will not last very long. And as a general rule, as you move into the new year, you get into January, you'll start seeing those old relations get reestablished again as, you know, managers start to put positions on to move new money into the market for that year, or basically just start getting squared away with what position they're going to take in what market for 2018, I should say. But Let me make a comment, Chris, while I'm talking about this, though, too, as far as the commodity sector in general goes. And I noted this on the blog yesterday, too, because recently we've been seeing a bout of selling that's hit the commodity complex as a whole. And this includes, when I say commodities as a whole, I'm talking about the metals, you know, the base metals, the precious metals, the grain sector, the softs, you know, the livestock market. A lot of times you'll see that particular market, I mean, the commodity sector, you'll start to see some general direction in that one way or the other. Either you're buying will come in and it's across the board buying, or you'll see some selling come in and it's across the board selling. It seems to be very indiscriminate at times. And yesterday we saw a lot of that. We saw, you know, oil was down hard yesterday. We saw natural gas down hard. You saw gasoline, heating oil. So that energy complex was hit. The grains were sold off, livestock was sold off, the softs were sold, and of course the precious metals didn't escape that carnage yesterday either. You're seeing a continuation of that again today, with the exception being crude oil, which has popped up somewhat here today. But again, there's a general trend of selling that's taking place across the commodity complex today. And, you know, I've mentioned this before in my writings and other discussions and interviews as well. For me, as I watch the silver market in particular, one of the ways I try to get a sense of what direction silver might be leaning is to follow the broader commodity indices as a whole. And by that, I mean the Goldman Sachs commodity index is one you could use. The Dow Jones UBS commodity index is another one. There's a Rogers out there. There's quite a few. It used to be the old CRB, the Reuters Jeffrey commodity index. And basically, these are just a basket or a collection of various commodities that are weighted by group, however the, you know, the index fund owner wants to set that up. What you get with those indices is you get a good reflection or a good barometer of sentiment toward commodities in general. For instance, I remember way back in when we had the dollar falling down near 73. I forget when that was. Was it 2012 or 11? I can't remember. It's been that long ago. But we were watching those commodities just keep going. I mean, oil was running, natural gas was running, grains were going, and of course, silver was going, copper was going, gold was going. They all were tending to go in the same direction because you had a lot of those speculative flows coming into the commodity sector as a whole. Fund managers, they had clients who wanted exposure to the commodity sector, and there are funds like that, that they specialize in the commodities. And so a lot of money, a lot of hot money, momentum-based money went into those funds, and they poured it into the markets. And so as the commodity complex as a whole rose higher in price, silver was pulled up along with it. Well, you saw the exact opposite of that yesterday, and you're seeing it again today. Commodities are moving down in price. Again, the indices are moving lower. And, of course, you look at silver, and what's it doing? Well, it's down. So it's not unexpected to see it doing that today. Now, on occasions, you'll see gold, it'll buck that trend, mainly because of its safe haven status. You'll see gold higher like it was yesterday when silver was hit so hard. You know, gold was relatively stable above 1263. But today, you know, the selling across the commodity complex and the boost in the dollar was just too much, and down it went. So, you know, there are no set 100% guaranteed linkages, but there are linkages that are close enough that we can pretty much put some good stock in those as far as indicators.
You mentioned the dollar. There's been sort of a disconnect, I think I've noticed in recent weeks, while those equities just keep flying higher. And this, you know, national affinity for U.S. shares is just almost unprecedented. Not since the late 1990s have we seen anything like it. How big of a component is this tight negative correlation between shares and the precious metals, and what are the implications on a forward basis?
I think it's a huge connection there too, Chris. It really is. And to me, this, I try to keep things simple for when I'm trading. I found that the simpler you keep it, the better. And I look at markets and I kind of watch them. I mean, the way my screen is laid out, I can see everything at one glance. I can see all the commodities. I can see, you know, what the stock indices are doing. I can see the interest rate marks. I see the currency markets. General connection, what we've been seeing is that when you have what I call a risk trade, you know, risk on, for lack of a better word, you'll see those stock indices go soaring higher. You'll see bonds and interest rates, you know, the actual futures will drop in price, mainly interest rates are going higher. You remember interest rates go opposite direction of the bond price. So you'll see bonds falling. You'll see the yen in particular will start to fall. And then as the yen falls, you'll see the gold price drop as well. And that's because there's a risk on trade. You almost have to go back until we had, back in 2008, right before that credit crisis hit, we had this huge thing called a yen carry trade. For the readers who may not be aware of that, it basically, rates were so low in Japan. I mean, they were like a 0.5% that it was basically free money if you went over and borrowed money from Japanese banks. So what we had was a lot of hedge funds and very large speculative interest would go over to Japan. They would borrow huge sums of money in yen terms. Then they would take that yen that they just got from the bank, and they would convert that into the currency that they were going to buy shares in. For instance, they were going to buy U.S. shares. You can't buy U.S. shares unless you pay for them in U.S. dollars. So you have a foreign exchange where you sell your yen, you buy the dollar. So what was happening was the yen was getting weaker and weaker and weaker during the yen carry trade, and the dollar was getting boosted. And of course, stock prices were going up. And so you can sort of watch what happens with the yen, because there are still enough of that yen carry trade around, even today, what is this, 8 years later, 9 years later, that you can still see that trade in effect. And what I mean by that is when you have a risk on trade, generally speaking, the yen is going to be lower against the dollar, which it is today. Now, it doesn't have to be by a lot, but you'll see it drop and move down against the dollar. And as a general rule, again, talking very generals here, Chris, as the yen is weak, you'll see stock prices firm. You'll see bond prices fall. And of course, you generally tend to see gold prices fall as well. The exact opposite takes place when we call what I call the risk aversion or the risk off, or let's call it the safe haven trade. You'll see the yen move higher, you'll see bonds move higher, and you'll see gold move higher. And I mean, like I said, I just got it set up on my computer screen, and it's almost like clockwork. You can watch this happen. There's very few deviations from that pattern. And basically what you're watching when that takes place is you're watching shifts in sentiment among traders. You know, are they willing to take on risk, or are they not willing to take on risk? For instance, when we had the initial scare over there in North Korea, when he did his missile launches a while back, sent a lot of shockwaves through the market. And what you saw was stock indices sold off. You had bond prices soar. You had the yen move higher. And, of course, you had gold move higher. And when the concern faded, all those trades went the other direction. Gold dropped, bonds dropped, the yen dropped, and stocks went back up again. So there's enough of that pattern. It repeats often enough that you can see it pretty frequently. And matter of fact, it's exactly what we're getting today here as we're doing this interview. Stocks are higher. What do we have? Bonds are down over a full point. The yen is down about 0.7%. And gold, of course, is getting hit pretty hard as well. So that play is trade is still in play right now.
Give us an idea on the big trends as you see them for 2018. You know, we've got a new year ahead. Will we see more of this lack of enthusiasm for the commodities, or will things turn around?
You know, I wish I had that clear of a crystal ball, Chris. One thing that people follow me for years know, I'm not very good at predictions. I'm a trader, so I don't try to predict too often, but I do look for general trends, and I do try to figure out fundamentally what's going on and then see if my view is confirmed by the sentiment and in the market and by the price actions. So that being said, a lot in my mind hinges on the outcome of what's going to take place in U.S. and the U.S. here with tax reform. That's a huge deal for me personally as a trader, watching that and seeing how the market reacts to that. And that in turn will impact the growth rate in the U.S. economy next year. So let's put it this way. If the Congress gets tax reform passed and Trump signs it into law, and it has some pretty good provisions in it from what I've been able to read of the package, of course, we're not going to know what the final package is until it comes out of conference. But based on what I'm seeing now, it's a pretty business-friendly tax package they're putting together. If that thing comes through in its present form, I can see it boosting U.S. growth prospects next year. I mean, our economy, our GDP rate has improved. You know, we're still not where I think we should be. I think historically we should be up about 4%. You know, if we get there, I see continued bid into the stock market. I mean, you still seem to have this environment in which, you know, interest rates are rising very slowly, but it's a very, very slow, gradual rate of increase. It's not spooking stock traders right now. And so as long as that pattern is there, if you don't see any surge in short-term interest rates, you don't see the Fed panic, you see a continuation of improving growth. For me as a trader, watching what's happened over the last year and judging by the way the prices have moved, I can see continued pressure on the metals, mainly because I would think the dollar would get boosted, and I think you'd see the yen under pressure as well because people will be willing to take on risk. The wild card in this is what form exactly does tax reform take, and more specifically, are we going to get this thing with any retroactive components to it or what? You know, what's the form it's going to take? And then we'll have to see how the market responds to that. But, I mean, if you think about this, Chris, one of the features in that tax reform package was a lowering of the penalty for overseas corporate earnings that, you know, been parked offshore, so to speak. There are some estimates of, you know, some of that money could be in excess of $2 trillion. That's an awful lot of money. If that tax reform package comes through and you start to see U.S. corporations opt to go ahead and bring some of those earnings home, that's a lot of money that needs to come into the U.S. That would be very, very dollar positive for the U.S. dollar. And again, I mean, just based on previous linkages, if you have a dollar that's very strong, it's hard for me to see gold having a very strong rally in under that kind of environment or in those conditions. The flip side to this, then, is, however, if you do see the dollar get boosted like that and you start seeing some real pickup in growth, the thing I would watch for is to see if inflationary pressures pick up. And it's going to show up first in the wages, in the payrolls component. That's what we're watching so closely right now. If inflationary pressures begin to build, I think you'll see money coming into the commodity complex as a whole. Under that environment, I would be very friendly towards silver. Again, silver, in my view, has to have an inflationary environment in which to thrive. It doesn't do well in a sort of a slow growth, no inflation environment. We certainly know it didn't do very well in a deflationary environment. We all saw what happened to it back in 2008. But if you do get some inflationary pressures and you do start to see commodity prices in general rise, particularly in my standpoint, oil prices above $60 a barrel, West Texas Intermediate. If we get oil above 60, you'll see a general bid in commodities as a whole. I think that'll put a floor under the silver price at that point.
All right, Dan Norsini, why don't you tell folks more about the TraderDan.net website, what they can find, your blog, and any other topicality contact information?
Well, thanks, Chris. Yeah, we cover a lot of markets over there, Chris. You know, earlier, many years ago, I used to focus on gold and silver, but, you know, we branched out because I've been trading a lot of different markets for many, many years. So, you know, we follow the energy markets pretty closely now, oil markets, natural gas markets. We're also following a lot more of the ETFs because they're trying to take advantage of some of where these money flows are shifting into what various sectors. So we're watching defense sectors and biotech and tech sectors in general, a lot of other things. We're watching lithium, and of course, everybody's watching Bitcoin right now, which is, I don't know, that's a whole other story we could talk about some other day, Chris. That thing is absolutely amazing what's going on in there. But we do talk about it. I don't know if a whole lot of us are trading it, but we certainly do talk about it.
Traded in, just a lot of fun. Hopefully we can get on to some of these other topics in future discussion.
Oh, anytime, Chris. It's a pleasure talking to you again. Thanks for having me on the program.
Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, located at schiffgold.com, author of several must-read bestsellers. Welcome back, Peter.
Well, thanks for welcoming me back.
I wanted to start off, if we could, with the CPM Group. This is Jeffrey Christian's organization. They've been, I think, in the sidelines in recent years on the precious metals. He issued an almost $40 target for silver next year, noting tight supply and demand. Any comments?
I mean, obviously, silver is going to get to $40 an ounce at some point. Whether it's going to happen next year or not, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly possible. Don't know that it's something that you want to count on or bet on, but I do think that the price of silver is going to go up. So, you know, whether it goes up to $20 an ounce or $25 an ounce, you know, you're still going to make a lot of money if you buy it or if you buy silver stock. So even if it doesn't get that high that quickly, it still makes sense to buy silver.
You haven't really been, I guess, the biggest fan of the cryptos in recent years. And just in the context of the precious metals, even if you're not a big advocate, but do you think that it's possible it might be almost de facto indication of looming huge inflation? You have this market that's at least semi-free, Bitcoin, and then you have gold and silver, which are shackled by this enormous paper money scheme.
If you actually subscribe to that type of manipulation, the same thing that potentially is going to happen to Bitcoin, because later this month they're going to be trading Bitcoin futures. And certainly Bitcoin futures are going to be more susceptible to manipulation than gold futures, because gold futures actually settle in real gold, whereas a Bitcoin futures will settle in cash. So it's much easier to manipulate a market that cash settles than one that settles in a physical commodity. So that's going to happen. But, you know, I think the real relevance of these cryptos now is that, like, in particularly in Bitcoin, since so many people now admit that Bitcoin is not going to circulate as a currency, that it's too slow, it's too expensive, it's too inconvenient, so it's not going to actually circulate and achieve the promise that its original adopters, you know, were so, you know, enthusiastic about. Pretty much people have abandoned that, but now they claim that the value in Bitcoin is that it's digital gold, that it's now not really a medium of exchange or a currency, it's just digital gold, and that people are just going to buy Bitcoin as a store of value. As an alternative to actual gold, they're just going to buy this digital gold. And that's kind of the phase that it's in now. And that's kind of why you're seeing the institutional demand, because obviously when a hedge fund is buying Bitcoin, it's not buying it because it wants to use it to buy a cup of coffee. It's buying it because it thinks it's going to appreciate. And so the idea that Bitcoin is going to supplant gold and that it's going to be a store of value, and I even hear people thinking that central banks are going to use it as a reserve. But this is where we are in this phase of the bubble. Yeah, you know, I have no idea how much bigger this bubble could be. I mean, it could certainly grow to be the largest bubble in the history of the world. I don't know. I mean, it already is probably one of the largest bubbles. Maybe it is the biggest. I don't know, but I think it's an enormous bubble. I do believe it's going to pop. That does not mean that the price can't keep rising. I mean, obviously, look, it's almost at 12,000. And, you know, I said on interviews, you know, I mean, I got quoted in a newspaper a month ago. I said, well, it hit 8,000. Why don't you go to 80,000? I mean, who knows? I mean, that doesn't mean that people can't make money buying it. You know, there are people that bought a lot of dot-com stocks and sold them before they went to zero and made profits. Then again, there are a lot of people that bought it at the high and wrote it down to zero and got wiped out. Same thing's going to happen with Bitcoin. It's just you don't know who those people are yet.
See, it looks to me like it might be paving the highway, the cryptos, for more freer markets as those assets migrate to the blockchain.
Bitcoin, I think, and these cryptos are more of a speculative mania, you know, than an indictment of the dollar or the euro. I mean, I think the early adopters, that got in, you know, the free market libertarian guys, you know, anarcho-capitalists. I mean, they were attracted to it. And, you know, I outsmarted myself. You know, when I first learned about it, I was saying, you know, look, well, it's not going to work. And I still don't believe it's going to work. But I underestimated the ignorance or the greed of other people into not understanding that and just to buying it anyway. You know, I mean, because the same reasons that I was buying gold, you know, a lot of people were buying cryptocurrencies, and they have an opportunity now to sell them and make, you know, more money than I'll ever make on gold. I mean, the amount of appreciation that Bitcoin has already had is by far greater than anything we're going to see from gold. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just not, you know, going to happen. Not unless the dollar goes to zero, right? Unless we have massive hyperinflation. But then it's not just going to be gold going up. It's going to be the price of everything going up. And that is one of the reasons that you can show that the rise in Bitcoin is really not signaling that we've reached a point where we've lost confidence in fiat currencies, because we're not seeing rises in other commodities. I mean, you're not seeing, you know, big increases in oil prices and metal prices and, you know, agriculture, gold, silver. I mean, it's not like everything is going up. It's just the cryptocurrencies that are going up. So that really doesn't look like a loss of confidence in the dollar or the euro. It just looks like a huge increase in speculation in the crypto. There's going to be a loss of confidence in the dollar. And then the question is, when people finally lose confidence in the dollar, will they also lose confidence in cryptocurrencies? I mean, there are a lot of people out there that think, oh yeah, you know, when we have a currency crisis, people are going to go to the cryptocurrencies. I think the currency crisis will include the cryptocurrency. They will dump their dollars and their bitcoins and buy gold.
I agree with you. I think systemically we will also have huge corrections in cryptos when the fiat money bubble implodes. But that still, you know, leaves the big question mark. What will be the tipping point? What's going to send us over the edge?
Murphy had a law, right? Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And there's so many things that can go wrong here. One of them will, right? And so, but I, you know, you just don't know until it's over whether there even will be a pin or whether the bubble will just deflate on its own. Right? It doesn't even need a pin, right? The air just starts coming out of it. And, you know, when you mention inflation, you know, you happen to believe, if you're one of the people that believes that these cryptocurrencies are just getting started. And believe me, I talk to a lot of people who think buying now is like getting in early, right? I mean, even though Bitcoin is at 12,000 or, you know, they think that you're still getting in near the ground floor, right? And they think it's going to go up 10 times, 20 times. Well, if that's the case, right? Because right now, all these cryptocurrencies have a combined market cap of about $350 billion. If they go up another tenfold from here, that's $3.5 trillion. And what that represents is massive inflation, because if you view these cryptocurrencies as currencies, that is an enormous increase in global money supply. And of course, if they go up 10 times after that, if they increase 100-fold, then you're talking about $35 trillion. I mean, you're talking about an amount of money that's just, you know, impossible to fathom. The question is, this is pure inflation, because there is no added production associated with this purchasing power, right? The people who are getting rich owning Bitcoin didn't produce any products. They didn't create any services. So there's not a factory there that's producing more consumer goods that people can buy. So to the extent that you've gotten rich on Bitcoin, it's at the expense of somebody who doesn't own Bitcoin. Because all that's happening is money, is purchasing power has to be transferred from people who own dollars and people who own euros to people who own cryptocurrencies. So while the people who own cryptocurrencies are going to find that they're now rich, the people who don't own them are going to find that they're poor.
Yeah, this notion, and it is a false notion, that Bitcoin is just created out of thin air. It takes a tremendous amount of resources. You know, you only have 16 million circulating, and frankly, it's much smaller than that because
there's 16 million Bitcoins, but there's 16 million Bitcoin Cash, there's 16 million Bitcoin Gold, and there is an unlimited number of spin-offs or forks, whatever they call them, that can be spun off of Bitcoin. So to say that there's only 16 million, it'd be like if I was an artist, you know, I make a painting, you know, and so, well, these are the only ones I've made. I can keep making them.
You're right. It's an endless supply of paintings can be created. But you know what? There's only so many Pollux.
If he's going to keep on, you know, saturating them, there's Bitcoins, you know, the Bitcoin brand, if there's Bitcoin Gold, okay, there's going to be Bitcoin Silver, Bitcoin Platinum, Bitcoin Supreme, Bitcoin, you know, Improved, New Bitcoin, Bitcoin Plus. And plus, not only are there all these new cryptocurrencies that are branded Bitcoin, but you have you know, 13, 14, 15 other, the world gets satiated.
Let's talk to the satiation. What is that level? What is the level? And I would argue, and I've heard some interesting debate in this area, I think you could make the case, we're still in early days.
Look, I don't know. We won't know this till the end. But eventually, right, it's all about demand, right? The supply keeps growing of various cryptocurrencies, and the demand is there. But at some point, the demand is going to go away, right? Once the bubble pops, right, if let's say Bitcoin goes, let's say I don't know where it's going to top out. Let's say it goes to 20,000, and then it crashes down to 2,000, right, a 90% decline. A lot of the demand is not going to be there. I mean, a lot of the people who bought it, 20,000, 18,000, 17,000, 16,000, done with it. I lost 90%. What a disaster. All of a sudden now, but all these cryptocurrencies are out there, but all the people that were jumping on the bandwagon, all the people that were looking to get rich quick, they're not there anymore. I mean, maybe the true believers will still be there. And there will, obviously, if Bitcoin goes from 20,000 to 2,000, people still have a lot of profits who got in early, the people that bought them for 50 bucks, 10 bucks, 100 bucks, right? So they can still be confident that, hey, you know, this is fine. We've seen this before. Bitcoin has gone down this much and, you know, it'll go up again. But there's going to be a whole new crop of people who have been Google buy Bitcoin under Google Trends. That thing has gone ballistic in the last few weeks. And all these new people, believe me, they see that big a drop, they're not going to be so gung-ho about riding it out. I mean, so a lot of this new demand is going to go. Check the Google Trend for Bitcoin bubble.
Yeah, but you can see it. I mean, just take a look at the ETF. Okay, you've got the Winklevoss GBTC.
You guys are billionaires.
I know. Yeah, well, you know, we've been advising our clients for since under sub 100, and now it just hit 1600. But obviously, if you look at it, it's three standard deviations on the weekly chart, plus the volume spike. I see at least a 30 to 50% haircut just on that spike alone. It's that FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. Everyone's afraid of missing the train.
If the Bitcoin people are right about cryptocurrencies becoming the new global money, if you don't own it, the currencies to the people who own the cryptocurrency, because there is no wealth being created. When it comes to Bitcoin, a lot of wealth is destroyed to produce Bitcoin because it's very expensive. You have to use, right? I think it's more expensive to mine a Bitcoin than to mine an ounce.
It's comparable. I mean, you don't say that it's more destructive. I mean, because we ripped a mountain apart and spent a fortune processing the, you know, silver and gold ore. You don't turn away from precious metals because of that.
But that's because once you've expended those resources to extract gold out of the ground, right, you actually have a valuable.
You're making my point. It takes a little bit of introspection to get it. After you've spent a year to mine one Bitcoin, okay, thousands of dollars of equipment, and yes, an enormous amount of energy, but you do have a commodity. And this commodity, just like gold, I'm sorry, has some amazing characteristics that allow instantaneous and virtually anonymous, if you want to go to the trouble, transactions.
Are those any better than the qualities that all the other cryptocurrencies?
Absolutely. And they are because of the developers. And the huge node backbone that is at the heart of Bitcoin is unrivaled. It's unprecedented. And as a result, it creates prima facie Metcalfe's laws, network.
Look, I just saw, you know, one of the biggest places to use Bitcoin, right, is in China. China accounts for a lot of the energy costs, a lot of the trading volume. I was watching on CNBC this morning, and they were interviewing Jack Ma, of Alibaba, the Amazon of China. And they asked him, do you have any plans to use Bitcoin? He goes, no, not at all. We don't even look at it.
Richest man in the world. Bezos has his own coin now. Mostly that xenophobia, Peter, with China. Take a look at Venezuela. You've got tens of thousands of people. Their only means of subsistence right now in that horrible regime is literally mining Bitcoin. They're making up to $500 a month.
Yeah. Obviously, if the bubble bursts, then it's not going to work out. But while the prices are this high, sure. People that live in countries like that have a lot of inflation and irresponsible governments, which is pretty much everybody, they need to get into gold. That's what they need to do, gold money. I mean, that they should just be opening up accounts at goldmoney.com, and they should be transacting in gold. They should be saving and spending and earning in gold.
Yeah, well, you know, gold money is now on the crypto trend. If you want to convert some of your Bitcoin profits, maybe you've had a tenfold, a hundredfold, who knows?
Gold money
accepts cryptos.
And the good thing about the gold money platform is that they are storing in cold storage the cryptocurrency, so you don't have to worry about it getting stolen. You don't have to worry about hacking, and you also don't have to worry about money laundering. They're actually buying a lot of the cryptocurrencies directly from miners. So they haven't been anywhere else. So you don't have to worry that they've gone through some kind of But so they provide a very secure way to store your cryptocurrencies. It's not that they're advocating that people buy them. They're simply allowing their customers to buy them.
They're definitely ahead of the curve there on the cryptos, and a hat tip, to James Turk and the whole crew for that. I think the cold storage thing, that's another topic, but it's an important one because that really is the only way to be sure nowadays. I mean, we advocate Ledger wallets and a few of the others, the Trezor wallets, keep the cryptos, and they're very inexpensive. And not only that, but the blockchain is instantaneously downloaded, so you don't have those long waiting times.
Back on the top of gold, I think one of the reasons that you're seeing the interest in digital gold is because you're not seeing any movement in actual gold. And the question is, when is the price of gold going to actually go up? And I think right now gold is kind of functioning the opposite to all the optimism that exists right now for the U.S. economy, for the U.S. dollar, Trump, the tax cuts. But all this is going to fade. In fact, they complicate the tax code. They include more loopholes than they close. So this tax code ends up being worse than the one that they're replacing. It's going to result in much larger budget deficits. So this is not a step in the right direction. Meanwhile, Trump as a candidate promised lower trade deficits. We just got the trade deficit today. It matches a 5-year high. I think the trade deficits are going to hit record highs under Trump. In fact, when Trump was a candidate, he promised to take advantage of the low long-term interest rates by locking them in and selling more long-term bonds. But what his Treasury Department has decided to do is sell no long-term bonds and shorten the maturity of the national debt to make the U.S. economy even more vulnerable to the inevitable rise in interest rates. So none of the things that Trump really campaigned on are happening. I mean, we're not getting rid of the regulations. We're simply, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic that he inherited from Obama. And eventually, the markets are going to figure this out. The stock market's going to stop rising. The economy is going to sink into recession. And gold is going to go ballistic. If that's the pin that pricks the crypto bubble, it may be. I've been speculating that one of the things that could really undermine cryptos is a big increase in the price of gold. Because if it happens, it's possible that a lot of people that own cryptocurrencies might decide, hey, let me take some of my crypto product and buy some actual gold. Gold's now finally moving. Maybe gold gets to 1400, 1500. People might think, hey, maybe it's going to go to 1000. Let me take some of my Bitcoin profits and buy some gold. Well, if a lot of Bitcoin owners decide to do that at the same time, look out.
Well, take a look at your correlation matrices, correlation between Bitcoin and the precious metals, as well as the S&P 500, are pretty constant, meaning that they're very closely related to S&P. So take a look at the movement we've had in the ETF. That's usually where we see the signs of frothiness and 3 standard deviation close on the weekly bar above, the Bollinger Band, plus massive crazy volume on a spike. You're near a top, at least short term.
I mean, we'll see, but what I do, again, my crypto exposure really, I guess, is that I own a bunch of stock and gold money. I mean, and I don't, go on television and or radio and recommend that people buy stocks. But that personally, I think that if Bitcoin succeeds, right, if Bitcoin becomes even bigger, I'll make a lot of money because I think gold money is going to profit from the Bitcoin bubble if it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. On the other hand, I think if the bubble pops, I think that's also good for gold money because I think it helps with its primary business. So I think gold money kind of wins. One of the best positioned publicly traded companies to profit from from the adoption, a wider spread adoption of cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin in particular, especially on the institutional, where you can buy Bitcoin in your Charles Schwab account or your Fidelity account, if people can have it on.
In their IRAs. Keep in mind now that you can buy the ETF, the Bitcoin ETF, in your IRA, and I think that's a huge part of the volume spike here.
But they have storage fees in there, too. I think storage fees are going to be lower. I think what gold money is going to do is enable you to buy Bitcoin without an ETF.
In the near term, I do see some frothiness, but just try to keep Metcalfe's law in mind, because if we only have 1% of the world, meaning Europe, Asia, and the United States, only 1% or have any exposure at all or even a wallet to Bitcoin, think of what happens with that exponential component.
1% is already a lot. I mean, if you have a product and you get 1% of the people in the world to buy it.
But 50% of Americans own shares. That sounds like a bubble to me. U.S. equities.
What makes the stock market a bubble is that the prices are way out of whack with the fundamental value. And the source of the bubble is all the cheap money. And I actually think the source of the Bitcoin bubble is the same. All these bubbles that we have, And it's not just in cryptocurrencies or the stock market. You've got bubbles in the bond market. You have bubbles in the real estate market. There are bubbles in collectible art and collectible automobiles and all sorts of things. And the reason we have so many bubbles is because of this monetary policy of this world central bank. They are blowing these bubbles. So it's not a coincidence that you have 0% interest rates, negative interest rates, quantitative easing, and that bubbles are all over the place. I mean, people criticize me and say, Peter, you think everything is a bubble. Well, unfortunately, when you get this kind of monetary policy, you get bubbles everywhere. The irony is the one place there's not a bubble is in gold and silver.
Yeah, and I think that really circles us back to my opening argument. Isn't really the crypto revolution emblematic of an inevitable price spike and maybe even runaway or galloping inflation in the precious metals? If the markets were free, if we truly had a free precious metals, gold, silver, and shares unencumbered by these draconian measures that we see at the exchanges and huge futures arrangements levied against them, then we would have an enormous spike up in the precious metals.
Gold prices were able to rise from under $300 an ounce in 1999, 2000 timeframe, all the way up to $1,900 in 2011. That rise occurred with the futures markets. I mean, so all the supposed manipulation and all this stuff didn't prevent the price of gold from rising back then, and it's not going to prevent it from rising again. I mean, it's going to go up, you know, despite the efforts of whatever the powers that be to try to delay it and suppress it. And there are obviously reasons you would want to do that if you were a central banker or if you were just, you know, working, you know, you were a big, you know, bank, you know, Morgan Stanley, UBS, Merrill Lynch, you know, JP Morgan, all these guys have reasons to want the price of gold to stay down. But despite all that, eventually it's going to go up. And yeah, I do think that what's happening in the cryptocurrencies is a taste of what can happen in gold and silver, but I do not believe that the prices will rise to that extent unless there is massive, you know, Zimbabwe-style inflation in the United States, which is not impossible. Because obviously, if you go back and look at the price increase of gold and silver during the days of runaway inflation in Zimbabwe, gold prices were rising even faster than Bitcoin prices are rising now in that currency. Runaway inflation, then that's possible. But if we just have high inflation, you know, double-digit inflation, 14%, gold prices are going way up, but they're not going to be able to go up, you know, to that level.
Okay, I expect roughly 3 to 5% of Americans and global inhabitants to be involved in cryptos, especially Bitcoin, by the end of 2020. I'm predicting 250K.
All right, so, and right now, the price is 12K, so 250 divided by 12.
And keep in mind, that's just the Forex's daily volume. Is around 5 to 6 trillion.
It's a lot. I mean, it's something like 10% or 10%, at least 10 or 15% of the world's money supply is what you're talking about. There are companies that are a few hundred billion. I mean, I don't think that it's going to get that big. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say that it's impossible that that could happen, but I would say it's highly improbable because I do think that along the way you would have people trying to cash out. You would have people trying to convert those paper profits into real profits. And will there be enough new people to just enter into the game? Because I think right now there's very few people that are selling. I mean, a lot of people are still holding on. And so that's what's, you know, keeping the supply a bit scarcer. But as you start to go up again another 10-fold and 20-fold, people want to get out of something. They're going to want to buy, you know, a fancy car or a new, you know, I mean, they're going to have so many paper millionaires and billionaires. They're not just going to want to stare at their Bitcoin, you know, riches in their wallets. They're going to, on their digital wallets, they're going to actually want to have the accoutrements of wealth, right? They're going to want to buy these nice things. And so that those are all sellers that are coming out trying to buy real things. People who are selling those things are not getting paid in bitcoins. They're getting paid in, you know, dollars or euros, whatever the currency is. And so there's got to be another buyer willing to hoard what you're trying to spend. You know, as you get higher and higher, the odds of that are smaller and smaller. Meanwhile, you know, you're going to have the futures contracts. You know, it has been very, very difficult to short Bitcoin. There hasn't been a lot of big money on the short side of these cryptocurrencies. And obviously, you know, yeah, I mean, the shorts could, there could be a short squeeze, but on the other hand, you could see a lot more selling that could ultimately break the back of this bull market and cause a lot of weaker players that have come in to dump their currency. So it'll be more difficult. So, you know, but I say, look, I'm not going to say it's impossible, right? Obviously, anything can happen.
If you just go to BitMEX with about $100, you can have a 100-to-1 leveraged futures and derivatives contract right now on Bitcoin. Imagine if, like, Netflix, Amazon, any of these companies just had 6 million shares. Not a billion shares outstanding, but just 16 million shares. That's like an opening IPO share allotment. You're really trying to put the Niagara Falls through a straw.
Look, I can tell you too from personal experience. I have owned stocks that I wish I sold because they got really high and I started thinking about how much higher they were going to go and how much money I was going to have. And this is, you know, a long time ago. And then the next thing you know, I mean, it collapses. And so I've seen this happen many, many times. And, you know, this is the psychology of greed and, you know, the fear of missing out and all the components that enter into, you know, the popular delusions and the madness of crowds. And believe me, the characteristics that I see and I encounter among people that own Bitcoin and have been involved, they're exactly the same as the characteristics I've encountered. Do I wish I'd have made a big personal bet on Bitcoin? Do I know people who did that and have made a lot of money? Yeah. I mean, this is the one bubble I should have caught, right? It was like a bubble that was right up my alley.
But don't give up on it yet. It still could be Shiftcoin. Silicon Valley's, you know, wonder boy, self-made billionaire, Tim Draper. You know, he's already calling for at least 100,000.
Look, I don't know if this is 97, 98, or 2000. You don't know until it's over. But important thing, if you want to get the topic, you know, back to gold and what's going on with gold, I mean, the fundamentals have never been better. I mean, and I've said that in the past because it was true at the time. But if I thought the fundamentals had never been better for gold 5 years ago, that may have been true 5 years ago, but it's even better now because we've had 5 more years of money printing. We've had 5 more years of quantitative easing. I mean, the bubbles have gotten that much bigger. So the fundamental case for gold is getting better with every passing day, and especially each day that the price doesn't go up. Yet the reasons for it to go up do, they get bigger and bigger, right? So this thing, once this thing happens, I mean, once, you know, gold finally breaks out, it is going to be spectacular. But look, I think we're going a lot higher than 5,000 now. I mean, probably higher than 10,000. Gold is going to make up.
If we can have digital gold go from under one penny, all right, to 12,000, what do you think is going to happen to real gold?
See, there's not that much money that actually moved. You can look at the total market cap of Bitcoin, but how much money actually went in to move it? Because most of the value of Bitcoin is not based on the money that went into it. It's based on just the paper appreciation that came as a result of the marginal buying. I think so. It's going to take a lot more money to move the physical gold market than it took to move the Bitcoin market. But the reality is, though, if the central banks do, you know, come in a bigger way, may not take as much. I mean, it's, you know, and if you do get, and this is where you look at the ifs, none of the big players on Wall Street have any exposure to gold or gold stocks. I mean, they're not there at all. I mean, the hedge funds, the pension funds, the big endowments, all the big investors have no exposure, right? If they just decide they want to have a 2% or 3% allocation to gold and gold stocks, I mean, that's it. I mean, it's not even possible, but that's big money. But at some point, we'll move into the gold market. It's just that they're all going to do it at once. Nobody wants to be the first one to do it. Nobody wants to be outside the box, right? Nobody wants to take a chance to do something that nobody else is doing. But once everybody is doing it, then everybody's going to want to do it. In fact, once everybody's doing it, you got to do it. You know, the consensus money.
As soon as U.S. equities roll over, which you know is coming, it might be 48,000 Dow industrials, though, before that happens, or it might be 96,000.
When you look at a lot of these charts that show, you know, what's happened, and in fact, if you look at where we are right now, I mean, the valuations are already off the charts when it comes to, you know, measuring PE or the price of stocks relative to the risk that people perceive. I mean, we're at levels we've never seen, even at the peak of the 2000 bubble or the 2008 bubble. I don't know how much higher the market is going to go. Can the Dow get to 30,000? Maybe, you know, but, you know, every day we're getting closer to recession. Something's going to happen. You know, we could have a buy the rumor, sell the fact with these tax cuts. I mean, they've been bidding up the stock market on these tax cuts for so long. And eventually, you know, we're going to get them. And now what's the market going to rally on? Meanwhile, you know, there's going to be a lot of companies, when interest rates go up, and they've been going up, a lot of companies aren't going to have any profits. So what good is a tax cut if you don't have any profits? And especially if, you know, the dollar gets, raw material costs go up and interest costs go up and you have a lot of these over-leveraged companies. and all of a sudden they're losing money, the tax cut does you no good, right? Because you have a loss, you know.
It's a kiss of death. I mean, these U.S. equities, if you look at the correlation matrix, I mean, you can see that precious metals are just negatively correlated with U.S. stocks. So once that rolls over, it doesn't matter what Bitcoin's doing or any other bubble market for that matter.
They shouldn't be negatively correlated, because what is the source, the real source of the stock market going up is the cheap money. It's the Fed printing money and keeping interest rates artificially low. Well, that should be even bigger fuel for the gold market than it is for the stock market.
Eventually it will be. I mean, I think we can agree on that. We will see, you know, the precious metals move higher simply because the fiat money has to funnel somewhere. And, you know, Bitcoin can't absorb it all. U.S. stocks can't forever. We've got a bond market that's bloated, 30-year bubble there. I mean, inevitably, it's got to roll into something more tangible. And the one tangible thing we have, silver. I'd like your thoughts with the potential for bigger gains there.
Anybody can look at the ratio of gold to silver, and you can see that where it is now, I mean, silver is cheap relative to gold. Do you think it's going to stay that cheap, or do you think it's going to revert back to a more normal relationship? I mean, I believe that pretty much everything reverts to the norm eventually. And so I do think that silver is going to gain back some of the ground it lost against gold. I just, you know, the question is, when is that going to happen? But if gold goes to $5,000-$10,000 an ounce, chances are that silver proportionally would have gone up more in that environment. I mean, I think it would be unprecedented. If that doesn't mean it's guaranteed, but believe me, if gold goes to 10,000, you're going to make a ton of money in silver. Whether you make more money than you would have made in gold, it may not even matter, because you're going to make a lot of money.
Cliff High, I don't know if you're familiar with his work. He's involved in neuro-linguistic programming, and he was telling everybody it was going to 13,000, and it's almost just hit his target, okay? Everyone was laughing him off. His big thing now, mantra, is silver. This thing could literally, in the coming years, go one-to-one with gold. And as a result, the major populace, he thinks, not the central banks. The central banks will dominate gold. But the people will come in and say, what can I grab onto?
I've heard gold, silver described as the people's gold.
Yeah, it's the people's gold. It's poor man's gold. And what he sees happening is, as soon as 2018, the silver bandwagon, he's looking for triple and then four-digit silver.
I mean, if you're investing in silver, especially if you're investing in silver stocks, I mean, it doesn't have to go anywhere near that high for you to make a lot of money. So it's that, you know, those pie in the sky forecasts, you know, don't have to come true, right? Silver can go to $100, $200, which is still a very high price. But it's not going to happen without copper, you know, having a move, or without, you know, nickel or zinc or any of these metals. They're all going to go up. And in fact, grains are going to go up. Energy is going to go up. I mean, you're not going to see that kind of move in silver in a vacuum. It's going to be a broader move in the whole commodity complex because of inflation, probably because of stagflation. And it's probably going to be worldwide. It's not going to be just in the United States. So I don't think it's just going to happen all by itself, like what you're seeing with the Bitcoin. I think when you see that kind of move in precious metals, it's because the world grasps the inflationary aspects, but in central banks, and this is going to manifest itself, prices going up.
I think case in point, you don't even need to have increased price expectations or inflationary things on the horizon really to turn people to silver. And here's why. You can have something just like Tesla buying up nickel and all these other rare earths, molybdenum and all the rest, in order to make these enormous high-powered batteries.
It could do like a palladium or like a uranium. I mean, where you have one commodity just kind of play that is going to occur within a broader, you know, inflationary commodity bull where everything is going up. And then, yeah, you could have silver that can go up much more. But I think it's going to happen in the context of, you know, just people seeing that there's inflation, people looking for stores of value, people looking to get rid of bonds. You know, right now people are still holding on to long-term treasuries and gilts and JGBs and all this low-yielding sovereign debt when they're really looking to get rid of it. And they're looking to buy something real in the precious metals.
Very good. All right. Please tell people more about Peter Schiff as well as all the services you provide. Any other contact information?
Gold, you can buy it from me through Gold Money, through Schiff Gold, my website, shiftgold.com. If you want to buy physical gold, you know, one of the products that Gold Money is now selling, and you can go to their website too, we sell it through Schiff Gold, is called Mene.com. And this is gold jewelry made from 24 karat gold, where when you're buying the jewelry, you're actually also investing in gold at the same time, because they sell the jewelry based on the weight of gold. So the price of the jewelry changes as the price of gold changes. But the difference is, let's say, you know, you go to Saks Fifth Avenue and you spend $5,000 on a gold necklace. You're buying $500 worth of gold, right? So, I mean, yeah, I mean, if the price of gold goes up tenfold, you might be able to sell it and get your money back, but you need a tenfold increase. Whereas you buy a gold necklace from Monet, and you're paying $5,000, you're getting $4,500 worth of gold. So there, you don't need a big move in the price of gold to get your money back if you decide you don't want to wear the necklace anymore.
You know,
but you're storing your wealth while you're wearing it at the same time. So the design fee is very small. You're actually buying gold. Now, you're paying more than you would pay to just buy a coin that sits in your safe because you're getting the utility of wearing it, right? So you get to wear your wealth, you know, and store it at the same time. So you can get some of those too at Shift Gold. You can get them at Mene.com. If you've got a bigger portfolio, if you've got more serious money, hey, and if you're a Bitcoin millionaire, you know, take some of your profits and you can open up an account with me at Europe Pacific Capital. Europac.com is our website, and I can manage money for you. You know, you can have a brokerage account. I can help you invest around the world in places like Switzerland, Singapore, Hong Kong, New Zealand. I mean, wherever we want to invest, get your money out of the dollar, get into good quality companies, some of them, of course, mining companies. I also have a number of mutual funds, including a gold fund that we manage. So we have managed accounts, mutual funds. I mean, I have all kinds of ways that I can help you preserve and grow your wealth in the economic environment that I see coming. So that's Europe Pacific Capital. Europac.com is the website to check us out. 800-727-7922 is my phone number. And of course, don't forget social media. I do the Peter Schiff Show, my podcast on schiffradio.com. You can listen to it on my YouTube channel, Peter Schiff. You know, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, all that stuff. I'm constantly out there trying to put my perspective out in the public realm. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, just, you know, you can get my newsletters, sign up on europac.com for, you know, my weekly digest. There's all sorts of ways that you can, you know, stay in touch with what I'm saying, even if you're not a client.
You know, I'd encourage folks now with the holidays approaching, with the Monet idea, you know, you can obviously wear some of your precious metals.
All right. Thanks a lot, bud.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. Lots of times we think, or are led to believe, that we can deny something and it will simply go away. Healthcare reform is one of those subjects. I have commented before that at its root, I believe the dramatic increases in healthcare costs mailed to voters just before the 2016 presidential election were one of the, if not the reason, that created the election results so many have since tried to deny. Despite all the issues that are tossed around, the 800-pound gorilla called healthcare that sits in the room with us and is growing in size each and every day must eventually be dealt with. Absent congressional action on this matter, three state governors assembled this week: John Kasich of Ohio, John Hickenlooper of Colorado, and Bill Walker from Alaska, to put forth what they said are bipartisan ideas that other governors and eventually the Congress must come together on to reform healthcare costs. Meanwhile, the gorilla in the room with us is growing heavier by the day. The governors fielded questions at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. I watched the news conference on C-SPAN. Some of the suggested goals of this plan, and plan is a generous term, because there were great generalities, but no specifics. Some of those suggested goals discussed moving away from a fee-for-service system and providing what they referred to as market-based incentives for providers, along with decreasing pharmaceutical drug costs and establishing work requirements for those receiving Medicaid assistance. These governors authored a letter in which they said, "Proposed premiums for the most popular exchange plans are expected to increase 18% in 2018, and a total of 2.5 million residents in 1,400 counties will have only one carrier available to them on the exchange." They also said reforms should not shift costs to states. They said reforms should not fail to provide the necessary resources to ensure that the working poor or those suffering from mental illness, chronic illness, or addiction can get the care they need. When language like this is bandied about, don't you get the distinct impression that we are about to be should upon one more time? Take the first should that they discuss, which is not shifting costs to states. Stop the presses right there. All this is cost shifting. Cost shifting that will be dressed up with bipartisan words and flowery language as restrictions to services are increased and the blame for the problem is gradually shifted to the end user, for whom Obamacare, or what has been called the Affordable Care Act, was originally created. This problem will not be solved with market solutions or any other such nonsense, because there is no free market when the government is this heavily involved already. The only solution will be to pass the buck. Blame the victim, who in this case is the insured end user. All of this meddling into healthcare was originally intended to help. And then they will print the difference, as they ultimately do in all circumstances. However, this time around, the one thing that may make for more honest negotiations in this process is a mandate that all elected officials, presidents, Congress, governors, their families, their staffs, everyone, regardless of wealth or status, will be required to use the very system, the very healthcare system, they are once again trying to shore up and shoehorn the rest of us into, along with that 800 and soon to be 8,000-pound gorilla that is in the room with us and is growing heavier by the day. But that won't happen, and we will print the difference. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.